It's time once again for the Disability News on Sun Sounds. This is your volunteer reader, John Curry. Welcome. On today's program, I'll be reading an article from the Disability Scoop about the effect that the government shutdown is having on organizations that provide services to people with disabilities. From ABC News, you'll hear a piece about a driving simulator that helps people with disabilities learn to drive. I'll also be reading an article from Livability about Cheston Brown, a teenager with disabilities who created a company that publishes children's books, a piece from the Arizona Digital Press about Banner Health's use of artificial intelligence to test for vision loss, as well as other articles of interest. But first, here are some upcoming events of local interest. Now, next month, the Vision Rehabilitation Technology Expo Association is bringing the 29th Annual Expo to Phoenix. The Vision Rehabilitation and Technology Expo, V-Rate, offers individuals, families, and professionals from across Arizona free access to educational seminars on best practices in vision loss and includes emphasis on the intersectionality of other disabilities, such as hearing loss. Presentations and workshops will include topics such as using assistive technology, job readiness, advocacy, specialized learning modalities, defining independence, developing critical thinking skills, engaging in the social fabric of the community, and fostering self-determination for sustainable success. A comprehensive list of exhibitors and vendors will be on hand to provide information, resources, and the opportunity to test out technology designed to be accessible to those living with vision impairment of all abilities. The keynote speaker is Jeffrey Richter, PhD. Jeffrey is a freelance health and science journalist whose work focuses on disability issues. He currently writes for Psychology Today magazine on topics involving blindness and low vision. He's a member of the American Medical Writers Association, where he co-chairs its DEI committee. The expo will also feature AI for Accessibility, full-day training. Discover how today's AI tools can transform accessibility for blind, low vision, and other disabled users at school, at work, and in everyday life. There will be hands-on workshops with guided labs on desktop and mobile devices using powerful tools like ChatGPT, Windows Copilot Vision, Microsoft 365 Copilot, and Google Gemini. You will learn through practical step-by-step exercises and explore real-world applications that enhance accessibility and connect with others passionate about inclusive technology. Now, the expo will be held on Friday, November 14, 2025, at the Ability 360 campus in Phoenix. Registration is open now, and you can register at vrate.org. That's V-R-A-T-E.org. There's a separate registration for the AI for Accessibility full-day training. That registration is also available at the vrate.org website. For that training session, space is limited to just 25 participants, and registration is on first-come, first-serve basis. For that training, you should bring a laptop, a phone or tablet, chargers, and they recommend a headset as well. Now, Ability 360 is working with the City of Phoenix to make the city more accessible for everyone. As part of that effort, they're requesting feedback from the community through a 5-minute survey. The City of Phoenix is working to make the city more accessible and enjoyable to persons with disabilities and everyone, while also ensuring compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA. A crucial part of the process is conducting an ADA self-evaluation to identify city facilities that are not compliant. The self-evaluation began August of 2024 and will continue through January of 2028. The City of Phoenix Equal Opportunity Department and Street Transportation Department are seeking input from the public about its degree of accessibility and feedback on what is important to members of the community living with disabilities. The ADA Self-Evaluation Summary of Findings report and public outreach recorded sessions will be available upon completion of the self-evaluation. Community input is valuable to help ensure the city continues to provide access for people with disabilities through its facilities and programs. The survey will also assist in the prioritization of proposed improvements. Citizens are encouraged to participate by completing the survey. It will take approximately 5 minutes to complete. You can find a link to the survey on the ability360.org website. Now, a piece from Livability Now, which is a publication of Ability 360. The article is entitled Cheston Brown is Making a Difference Through Children's Books by Zach Alvira, published October 2, 2025. Cheston Brown doesn't view himself as having disabilities. Instead, he sees himself as a superhero with superpowers. He's used those powers to begin making a difference in the lives of kids similar to him, as well as to remind them that they matter. Cheston created CHB Publishing Company 2 years ago. The teenager, who has autism, mitochondrial disorder, asthma, epilepsy, and utilizes a G-tube, began using storyboards with one of his teachers as a way to help him communicate. It helped him explain how he was feeling, especially as he experienced anxiety before hospital appointments or after procedures. The storyboards eventually turned into children's books about his experiences. His main goal with them was to help himself and kids just like him feel safe. "It helps me remember that I can do hard things, even when they feel impossible," Cheston said. "No matter how small my accomplishments may seem, they are still very important." Cheston has published 32 books since starting his publishing company. They've been distributed to family, friends, Barnes & Noble bookstores, as well as to local hospitals in the Phoenix area, one of them being Phoenix Children's Hospital. The books, while mainly focusing on his life with his disabilities, each have a different overall theme. Cheston's favorite book involves a horse named Daisy. He met her years ago and fell in love after riding her for the first time. In the book, she goes on various adventures, visiting ranches alongside her friends. Some include Cheston. It's a favorite among some of the kids he has donated books to, and it brings him joy to see the look on their faces while reading. "I didn't know I could make this many kids smile," Cheston said. Cheston's publishing company has picked up steam in recent months. He was featured by ABC 15 News Arizona during a Giveathon on April 9, 2024. He has an online bookstore through bookshop.org, which has raised nearly $40 million for local bookstores. A portion of Cheston's sales go toward that fund. He's seen an uptick in sales on Amazon, and when walking into Barnes & Noble, it's rare to not catch a glimpse of at least one child enjoying his work. "I love it so much," Cheston said. "Growing on Amazon, growing on Barnes & Noble, it's growing everywhere you can imagine. It's a really cool feeling." Many of Cheston's ideas stem from various hospital stays. He took the time being treated to think of ways he could lend a helping hand to other kids like him. His family helped him come up with the ideas for children's books. Cheston was sold on the idea right away. The ideas were slow to form at first, unsurprising to his family given his health at the time. But as he has become better able to manage his disability and live closer to an independent lifestyle, the ideas began to flow quickly. Ultimately, he aims to be a friend to kids, a support system that can help them navigate challenging times in life. I just want to make sure everyone in the hospital has a friend, he said. While still living with disabilities, some of Cheston's worst days may be behind him as he grows older and learns how to manage them. He recognizes the struggle of lengthy hospital stays or uncertainty, but he believes they made him stronger. I'm really strong, absolutely strong, Cheston said. It's my dream to become popular and help kids. That dream is coming true. Cheston aims to continue donating his books to hospitals and schools. He believes the more he can donate, the bigger difference he can make. Just like he wants to remind himself he is not alone in anything he goes through, he wants all kids to feel the same. And just like he has been shown love throughout his battles, he wants to support others by showing them love, too. Behind every smile and laugh, there might be challenges you can't see, one of Cheston's favorite sayings reads. Let's practice kindness and empathy and help each other reach the highest heights. Next up, this article from Forbes entitled, Federal Layoffs Threaten Disability Rights and Future Workforce, by Keely Cat Wells, published October 18, 2025. As the United States marks the 50th anniversary of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, the law guaranteeing millions of disabled students a free and appropriate public education faces an unexpected threat, a sweeping round of federal layoffs that could stall decades of progress. Earlier this month, the Trump administration announced a series of reductions in force, RIFs, affecting thousands of federal workers across multiple agencies. At the U.S. Department of Education, those cuts hit especially hard in the offices that protect the civil and educational rights of disabled students, the Office of Special Education Programs, OSEP, the Rehabilitation Services Administration, RSA, and the Office for Civil Rights, OCR, among them. The result, advocates warn, is a federal system at risk of being unable to enforce core education and employment protections. On October 15, a federal judge issued an emergency order temporarily halting the layoffs, calling them unlawful, while litigation continues. The Department of Education ensures that children, youth, and adults with disabilities have an equal shot at education and economic success, said Maria Town, president and CEO of the American Association of People with Disabilities, AAPD. An attack on the Department of Education is an attack on special education and people with disabilities. In response to the layoffs, a nationwide coalition of more than 200 disability and civil rights groups released a joint statement calling the cuts a dismantling of the very infrastructure Congress created to ensure children with disabilities could reach their full potential. Organizations such as AAPD, the ARC of the United States, the National Disability Rights Network, and the Council for Exceptional Children urged the administration to reverse course and restore the department's capacity to uphold federal education law. Now, here's a piece from the Arizona Digital Free Press entitled, Banner Health Testing for Vision Loss Using Artificial Intelligence Systems. This is a staff report. It was published October 16, 2025. Banner Health is improving care for diabetic patients with a new diagnostic tool that tests for diabetic retinopathy, one of the leading causes of blindness. Diabetic retinopathy is a serious complication of diabetes that can lead to blindness if not detected early, according to a press release. Nearly 75% of diabetics will develop some degree of it within 20 years of diagnosis, the release states. The device has been implemented at 24 Banner Health centers and clinics across Arizona. It streamlines the diagnostic process by eliminating the need for remote exam reviews and referral coordination. After a physician places an order, primary care patients can have retinal images captured during a quick exam. A diagnostic report is generated within minutes and reviewed with the patient by their provider. This device is helping to make the healthcare journey a much more seamless experience for our diabetic patients, said Dr. Jason Lubner, a Banner Health family medicine physician, in the release. We're excited to be able to eliminate some of the extra steps and frustrations that could come with the former diagnostic process and ultimately improve patient care by being able to diagnose people earlier. The technology, known as the Luminetics Core device, is the first FDA fully autonomous AI diagnostic system capable of detecting disease without physician interpretation, according to the release. Because diabetic eye diseases often develop without symptoms, experts recommend that people with diabetes have their eyes tested annually. Next up is a piece from ABC News entitled, Driving Simulator Assists People with Disabilities to Get Behind the Wheel, by Amelia Walters, published October 25, 2025. Katie Francis was always told they would never be able to drive a car, but their dream of hitting the road is now much closer to becoming a reality. The 20-year-old is just one of 20 people who have been gaining confidence behind the wheel thanks to a driving simulator which has been made available by a regional disability support service provider. Katie was born with mucopolysaccharidosis type 1 Hurler syndrome, MPS type 1, and was deemed legally blind from a young age. My whole body is affected by the condition, and I am short-statured, too, so I always knew driving a car would be hard because I'm so short, they said. I never had the same experience as other country kids who could just drive around because I was always told I would never be able to drive. But following a cornea transplant in 2022, Katie sat and passed the written exam to get their license. They said while it was a positive first step, the thought of physically getting behind the wheel caused a lot of anxiety. I'd never sat in the driver's seat of a car before, and it wasn't a great outcome at first. It actually put me off driving for a while, Katie said. 20 clients now have their L's. Dylan Blackley is the director of Support and Connect, which is a disability support service located in South Australia's Riverland region. He said Katie's lack of confidence to drive wasn't uncommon. A lot of my clients told me driving was a daunting experience, and so I just really wanted to close that gap for them, he said. Living in a regional area, we are always starved for those resources at the best of times. If regional clients don't have access to these services, that doesn't seem fair to me. His search to help led him to the existing simulator technology, My Drive School, but he decided to take the course to the next level. I'm not one to do something half-hearted, so I decided to go out and get a car to make it an immersive experience, he said. I found a Ford Falcon Ute that could come straight off the chassis, which made it easy to transform into a purpose-built simulator. I have around 20 clients now who have gone on to get their L's, and they have said to me firsthand how much confidence they have gained from this. Accessibility in the regions. Katie was one of the first participants to take the wheel and said having the simulator in a nearby town made learning to drive much easier. When I heard the simulator was in Barrie, I thought, yes, I don't have to take a whole day out of my week to go to Adelaide to access something like this for maybe an hour, they said. The course has taken me from not knowing anything to knowing what to do in emergency scenarios that could actually happen in real life. It has made me really confident, and I don't think I'd be where I am now if I didn't use it. Simulators impact proven. The chief executive of My Drive School, Lisa Scaife, had the idea of developing simulation technology in Australia following her concerns about the rate of road trauma among Australian teenagers. She said the results for students who participated in the program showed its impact. "We had independent driving instructors rate competency among students, not knowing who had done the course prior," she said. "The children who did the course first came out 48% more competent and 17% less anxious." She said the cost and loss of young people's lives was too great, and the technology should be made accessible to all teenagers, no matter their ability. Last year, 243 people aged 17 to 25 died on the roads, and 39 drowned. Yet, we have 6 years of swimming lessons in schools, but no driver training in high schools. Road trauma costs approximately $30 billion a year. That's $82 million a day. You can roll out simulation training in every government school across the country for less than the cost of 0.001% of road trauma. Time to hit the road. Back in South Australia's Riverland, Katie is now gearing up to get their P plates, an achievement they once didn't think was possible. "The 3 years it's taken me to get where I am is mind-blowing with how much I have achieved," they said. "Knowing in 3 months I'll be driving alone kind of scares me, but it feels good knowing I'll be able to do things without relying on others." And now here's a piece from the Arizona Mirror entitled, "Hobbs Pauses Drastic Cuts to Children's Disability Services Following Outcry from Families." State pauses new attendant care rules as governor directs changes to include exceptions for complex cases. By Caitlin Sievers, published October 16, 2025. Parents of children with developmental disabilities who were scrambling to deal with massive service cuts finally got some good news today when the state paused the implementation of those cuts. Leading up to and following October 1st, when Arizona's Medicaid program began using those new rules to assess the hours of service those children qualify for, desperate parents who had little notice of the drastic nature of the changes begged the state to amend the rules. Some said the changes would leave them in fear of homelessness and their children at risk of being institutionalized. On October 15, just 2 weeks after the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, the state's Medicaid program, better known as ACCESS, began to use the rules, Governor Katie Hobbs announced a pause on their implementation. "Doing so," she said in a written statement, "will give the state time to undergo an emergency rulemaking process to amend the new assessment tool to allow exceptions for kids with extraordinary needs." Michelle Thorne, one of the advocates for the developmentally disabled community whose organization, Care for the Caregivers, has been lobbying the state for more flexibility in the new rules, reacted to the news with relief, thankfulness, and cautious optimism. "I'm happy that they listened to the caregiver community and instituted a pause," she told the Arizona Mirror. "We were really struggling with the pace of implementation." Details about the strict age-based limitations to the services children qualified for through the Department of Developmental Disabilities were only announced publicly about a month before they were implemented, leaving parents panicking about how to deal with huge disruptions in the lives of their families. The new rules regarding how many hours the state will pay for either a parent or outside caregiver to provide attendant care or supervision for certain tasks and habilitation or skill development to children served by DDD were the result of huge spending increases for those services last year. While Republicans in the Arizona legislature blamed DDD's parents as paid caregivers programs for the cost increases, increases in paid hours for parents and outside caregivers both contributed to those increases. after months of protests from members of and advocates for the developmentally disabled community, in April, the state finally passed a bill that provided $122 million in gap funding to DDD to deal with cost increases without sudden cuts to services. DDD and Access immediately began developing a new assessment tool to evaluate how many attendant care and habilitation hours each child could receive based on changes in the law. But many parents didn't find out how drastic the cuts to those services would be until early September. During a webinar about the changes on September 25, Zane Garcia Ramadan, Assistant Director of DDD, and Jakina Lebsock, a Deputy Assistant Director at Access, admitted they made mistakes in communicating about the new rules. "We acknowledge that the rollout of the new policies was not perfect, and we will commit to doing better moving forward," Ramadan said. But Ramadan also emphasized how crucial the cuts are to the future of the entirety of DDD, because of huge increases in attendant care and habilitation hours for those under 18 that resulted in exponential cost increases. Altogether, DDD spent $77 million on attendant care and habilitation services for those under 18 in 2019. That cost rose to $380 million in 2024, and $614 million in 2025. Those increases are coming out of the state's general fund at a time when deep federal cuts to Medicaid and other programs are coming and are likely to put the state budget in the red. It's for this reason that Thorne still has concerns. Even though this pause will give parents who rely on DDD for attendant care and habilitation services more time to prepare for changes, she said the feared cuts are still coming. And it's unclear if some of the Republicans in the GOP-controlled legislature will continue funding DDD at current levels, or if they would again agree to provide supplemental funding to cover more cost increases this year during the next legislative session that begins in January. "This is a pause," Thorne said. "It doesn't mean that the rollout of the new rules won't happen and that cuts won't be made. At some point, we have to stabilize the system." A list of facts about the pause posted by Access said that it was spurred by advocacy from families and that Hobbs had directed the Medicaid program to reevaluate the assessment tool to include exceptions for children who require extraordinary care. That change was based on pleas from parents like Jessica and Dominic D'Amato of Sholo, whose six-year-old daughter Lillian needs constant one-on-one supervision and help with all tasks of daily living, from dressing to showering to preventing her from injuring herself. They were just one of many families who scoffed at the new rules that cut supervision services for kids younger than 10, because a parent of a child without disabilities would be expected to watch them closely until that age. The D'Amatos argued that the constant vigilance required to prevent Lillian from escaping out a window, banging her head on the sidewalk, or burning herself on hot water faucets were far above and beyond the kind of supervision the parents of a non-disabled six-year-old would have to provide. "It's a huge relief for parents," Thorne said of the pause and rule changes. "I know that extra time to plan is going to be life-saving, and I do mean that." Thorne said she was grateful to the governor's office, as well as Republicans and Democrats in the Arizona legislature, for listening to the concerns of the community and taking necessary action. "The state is undertaking an emergency rulemaking process to make these changes and plans to post them for an expedited public comment period. Arizonans with disabilities and their families deserve to have a say in decisions that affect their lives," Hobbs said in a statement. "By working together, increasing transparency and community input, we will continue delivering best-in-the-nation care to Arizonans with disabilities, including intellectual and developmental disabilities, while ensuring these services remain fiscally sound for years to come. Now here's a reminder that you are listening to the Disability News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is John Curry, your volunteer reader. Our next article comes from Newsweek. It's entitled, Disability Doesn't Have to Mean Isolation, published October 25th, 2025, written by Joni Erickson Tada. A few years ago, I sat on the porch trying to console Rebecca, a 26-year-old woman with cerebral palsy. Earlier that day, a few volunteers at our Joni and Friends retreat for special needs families signed her up for the children's group. With her girlish grin and short blonde hair, Rebecca looked 10 years old. It was a mistake that happened all the time. Overcome with loneliness and discouragement, she cried, "Joni, I don't have any friends. I'm so lonely." There are so many people like Rebecca. Experts bemoan the loneliness epidemic and its impact on youth, mental health, longevity, and chronic pain. The ravages of loneliness are especially hurting people with disabilities. Limited mobility, social stigma, and inaccessible spaces make isolation and loneliness a common problem. A recent U.S. survey of working-age adults with disabilities found that over 30% reported often feeling a lack of companionship, and up to 37% often felt left out. Nearly 40% of adults with disabilities feel isolated. That's what Rebecca feels, all alone in a world that seems to care less. I can relate. When I was paralyzed in a diving accident at the age of 17, I experienced loneliness, isolation, and sorrow. I've lived with quadriplegia for nearly 60 years now, and even though I am blessed with a husband, caregivers, and serving as the founder and CEO of the international disability nonprofit Joni and Friends, I know firsthand how disability can isolate someone from others. In my experience, this is especially true in the lonely hours of the night while struggling with chronic pain. Loneliness and isolation look different for everyone. For families of individuals on the autism spectrum, it might come in the form of strangers who don't understand their child's sudden outbursts. For other families, it might look like sitting on the sidelines with a loved one in a wheelchair, watching other children enjoy carnival rides. For all too many, it means staying at home alone with screens instead of finding genuine human connection in a park, a community center, or a church. But there's a different kind of loneliness. Maybe you rub shoulders with plenty of people, but their frenzied social media habits make genuine contact with them nearly impossible. Discussion about the weather, sports, and fashion may fill your day, while the real issues of life, the kinds that eat at you when you lie awake thinking at night, stay harbored deep inside. The mountains you face are unknown to those at work as you pass them in the hall with a smile. As Mother Teresa said, loneliness and the feeling of being uncared for or unwanted are the greatest poverty. After I broke my neck, I struggled with loneliness. During those difficult years, I saw a lot of other isolated wheelchair users at the rehabilitation clinic, and I saw something profound. Lonely people often develop the habit of looking inward, which only breeds more loneliness. Some do not have the emotional wherewithal to look outward, to observe that others have needs as well. Former U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy has emphasized that community and human connection are essential to health and well-being. Community is a powerful source of life satisfaction and life expectancy, he said in January. It's where we know each other, help each other, and find purpose in contributing to each other's lives. I couldn't agree more. My own mental health as a quadriplegic was strengthened by community. At the rehabilitation center, I sensed I would fall into suicidal despair if I looked inward. Instead, I looked outward and began asking for help. My physical needs demanded it. As I expressed my needs to others, I saw an organic community begin to grow around my own needs. People seemed to enjoy helping someone who cared about them. Whether it was emptying my leg bag, feeding me lunch, or taking me to a doctor's appointment, I expressed respect and gratitude. I was no longer alone, and these helpers felt the same. That's one of the reasons I started Joni and Friends, a disability ministry with a mission of creating hope, dignity, and places of belonging for individuals living with disability. That day on the porch with Rebecca, I suggested that she volunteer her time at a local center for cerebral palsy. And the special draw? She'd get to hold and love infants with cerebral palsy. "They need you," I said. At first, Rebecca wasn't sure. But once the opportunity at the Cerebral Palsy Center opened, she worked up the courage to take part. She started working with the children and ended up loving her job. She told me that it was her job now to go from crib to crib and pick up the little ones, as she put it, just love on them all. When the staff at the center saw this young woman's dedication, despite her significant disability, they commended her and reached out to her. She ended up making real and lasting friendships with the workers at the center. And over time, she forgot all about her loneliness. There are many ways to build community for people with disabilities. Think of the possibilities. Join a quilting, chess, or book club. Participate in a senior citizens center. Serve as a teacher's aide at a school. Volunteer at a camp for kids with disabilities or for foster kids. Open your home to international students. Be a docent at a museum or art gallery. Help at a food bank, your local library, or an animal shelter. If you don't have a disability, consider what you can do to help. Are there barriers you can remove to make it possible for people with special needs, like Rebecca, to join your favorite activity? Have you extended specific social invitations to families living with disability, or offered to learn what is needed to be a respite caregiver for a few hours a week? Genuine community naturally grows around the needs of others. So, if you're lonely, avoid looking inward. Look outward. Consider how you can help others. As the biblical writer of Ecclesiastes said, "Two are better than one. If two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone?" Find the needs of those around you. Take a chance and serve. You'll be doing your part to extinguish the loneliness epidemic, and you'll put an end to your own isolation in the process. Now from The Guardian, U.S. court rejects Trump officials' effort to delay rulings on veterans' benefits. Unanimous ruling calls administration's push to halt reviews of disability appeals an extreme request, by Aaron Glantz, published October 23, 2025. A panel of U.S. judges has rejected an effort by the Trump administration to delay court rulings on claims by veterans who say they have been unfairly denied disability benefits and other compensation tied to their military service. The 9-0 ruling, handed down on Wednesday by the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, was led by Chief Judge Michael Allen, a Trump appointee. The action is the latest example of the growing number of federal judges pushing back against Trump administration moves. Wednesday's decision came after Secretary of Veterans Affairs Doug Collins asked the court to halt work on nearly all cases until the government shutdown concludes. pausing VA's deadlines in nearly every case before the court is a significant and extreme request, and the secretary has failed to demonstrate that such sweeping relief is appropriate, the judges wrote. Veterans groups, which have urged politicians to end the shutdown, said Collins was using the impasse as a pretext to deny veterans their day in court. Some of these veterans have already waited 10, 20, or even 50 years for VA, the law, and the science to allow them to file claims for toxic exposure, such as Agent Orange and burn pits, said Paul Sullivan, a Gulf War veteran and national vice chair of the advocacy group Veterans for Common Sense. If VA had prevailed, these veterans could have faced indefinite delays for their benefits and, in some cases, their care. Trump sought to make those veterans wait longer, and that's unconscionable. The VA press secretary, Pete Kasperowitz, did not respond to inquiries by The Guardian's deadline. In its petition, agency general counsel James Barr acknowledged that delaying these veterans' cases is undesirable, but said the lapse of federal funding could preclude the VA from performing the official functions necessary to satisfy the court's filing deadlines in most of the cases currently pending before the court. The Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims hears approximately 15,000 cases a year. In most cases, it either grants the veteran's claim for compensation or sends the case back to VA claims adjudicators to resolve errors that could have led to a wrongful denial of benefits. As of September 2024, the median time between a veteran filing an appeal to disposition of a case by the court was 222 days, or 7.5 months. This next item is a blog post from the Ontario International Airport entitled, A Day to Remember. Ontario International Airport hosts Alaska Airlines Disability Flight Experience for Local Families, by Connie Royal, published October 22, 2025. Mock Flight helped families who have loved ones with disabilities practice and prepare for the airport journey. For many travelers, air travel is routine, from checking in and passing through security to settling into an airplane seat and taking off. But for families with children or loved ones on the autism spectrum, the unfamiliar sights, sounds, and sensations of air travel can be overwhelming. That's why Ontario International Airport, ONT, recently partnered with Alaska Airlines to create an unforgettable experience that helped more than 35 families practice and prepare for the airport journey in a safe, supportive, and sensory-friendly way. The event was designed to help the VIPs with autism and their families become more comfortable with what it's like to fly. From check-in to boarding, guests were guided through each step of the travel process through ONT, but with extra patience, understanding, and encouragement of trained staff and volunteers at every turn. Planning for success. Planning for this event started months before the September kickoff. At the helm was Larry Rowland, who serves as ONT's ADA coordinator. He oversees and ensures airport services and facilities meet the needs of all travelers with disabilities. Rowland also works in partnership with the Leroy Haynes Education Center in Laverne on ONT's Autism Self-Identification Program, which helps families with autism prepare for airport travel. In July, volunteers with the Leroy Haynes Education Center and the Autism Society began coming up with the logistical details alongside Alaska Airlines staff to ensure all VIPs would be safe during the mock flight. The volunteers were also on hand on the day of the flight experience to help direct VIPs and families through the airport and to the gate. A smooth check-in at Terminal 2. families began their day on ONT's Terminal 2, where they checked in at the Alaska Airlines ticket counter. Alaska's friendly customer service team welcomed each VIP and family member, provided real boarding passes, and explained what would come next. For many participants, this was their first time seeing the process up close. Having the chance to explore the airport without the pressure of catching a real flight made all the difference. At Alaska Airlines, when it comes to disability inclusion, we're looking at three different groups of individuals. We're looking at our employees, our passengers, and the communities that we serve, explained Stephen Nelson, Alaska Airlines Director of Culture and Belonging. Steve knows all too well the importance of exposing people with disabilities and their families to the airport journey, as he is a neurodivergent accessibility individual himself. It can sometimes be a little overstimulating, Nelson said. Maybe it can be a little scary. But events like this allow people that opportunity to come in, meet our employees, see the great things the airport has to offer, and really give them a really wonderful experience. And hopefully, this helps them become full-time guests in the future. Learning to navigate TSA security. Next came the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, checkpoint, a stage of air travel that can be particularly stressful due to the crowds, noises, and sensory stimuli. Thankfully, at ONT, there are multiple TSA security lanes and convenient screening options like TSA PreCheck and Clear, which makes anyone's journey at ONT a smooth experience from curb to gate. On this special day in particular, TSA officers worked hand-in-hand with Roland, ONT's ADA coordinator, to make the process as calm and educational as possible for the VIPs. TSA officers demonstrated to the participants what happens when personal items go through the X-ray machine and guided families through the metal detectors. For many of the VIPs, it was an empowering moment to see that going through security didn't have to be scary, but rather another step in their adventure. Boarding the plane and taking flight. After successfully making their way through security, families headed to the departure gate, where ONT's community engagement team and Ontario Airport Customer Experience Specialists, better known as OACES, greeted them with smiles and cheers. Soon it was time to board the aircraft, which was a major milestone for many participants. Once on board, passengers were treated to the full in-flight experience. The Alaska Airlines flight attendants conducted the familiar safety demonstrations, explaining seatbelts, oxygen masks, and emergency exits, just as they would on any commercial flight. Then the aircraft taxied around the runway for approximately 30 minutes, which gave families a sense of what it feels like to be on a real plane before takeoff. For many guests, hearing the engine sounds, feeling the vibrations, and watching the plane move was both thrilling and reassuring. Celebrating the journey. When the aircraft returned to the gate, participants deboarded to cheers from volunteers and airport staff. But the surprises didn't stop there. Each guest received an American Airlines swag bag filled with sensory toys, ONT goodies, and light refreshments. Many parents shared that the event gave them the confidence to plan future travel with their loved ones. For some, it marked the first time their child had ever stepped foot on an airplane, and it went better than they ever imagined. A lot of these families with autism are hesitant to fly or will not fly at all because they don't know how their loved one will act at the airport or handle the flight, Roland said. But after they go through our flight experience, they realize that it's not that hard and there's support and they have less fear. Building confidence one flight at a time. This special event is part of ONT's ongoing commitment to making air travel accessible and inclusive for all passengers, while also highlighting ONT's numerous accessibility features for travelers with disabilities. In 2023, the airport introduced the Hidden Disabilities Sunflower Program, which offers passengers with non-visible disabilities the opportunity to travel with confidence. These passengers are given a lanyard to show that their disability might not be immediately apparent, and they may need a little extra help, time, and understanding while at the airport. Roland expressed pride in the partnership with Alaska Airlines, emphasizing that accessibility and inclusion are essential parts of the airport's mission. "There's lots of resources, both at the airport level and through the airline," Roland said, "and we'll all get through the travel journey together." Now from the Disability Scoop, "Government Shutdown Has Disability Providers Running on Fumes," by Michelle D'Ament, published October 28, 2025. Nearly a month into the federal shutdown, some organizations aiding people with disabilities are starting to scale back services as the effects begin to mount. The government shut down at the beginning of the month when Congress failed to agree on spending before the start of the new fiscal year. Since then, thousands of workers have been furloughed and federal agencies have only operated services deemed essential. Social Security and Supplemental Security Income payments and funding for Medicaid home and community-based services have continued, but other operations, including civil rights investigations at the U.S. Department of Education, are at a standstill. Military families have reportedly seen coverage of applied behavior analysis therapy for their children with autism halted, and at least one state-run job training program for people with disabilities, the Tennessee Rehabilitation Center, Smyrna, closed its doors as a result of the shutdown. Now, protection and advocacy organizations, which exist in each state to provide free legal and advocacy services to individuals with disabilities, are feeling the pinch. In what may be the most extreme example, Disability Rights Arkansas said last week that it would stop taking new cases, and the organization plans to furlough staff beginning November 1, citing unprecedented funding challenges stemming from the shutdown. "We have been operating on limited carryover funds from FY 2025, which are now nearly exhausted," Tom M. Massaw, the group's executive director, said in a statement. "Without new federal funding, we are forced to make difficult decisions to preserve our ability to serve existing clients and maintain core operations." Massaw told Disability Scoop that funding for two of the organization's 9 grants are out of money and 2 more will be depleted by mid-November. "The longer the shutdown goes on, the more difficult decisions I will have to make around the holidays," he said. Meanwhile, other protection and advocacy organizations, or PNAs, said they are being more judicious about how they use their resources. Gwen Orlowski, executive director at Disability Rights New Jersey, said her group is accepting all calls through their intake process, but prioritizing whether to provide information and referral or to take more action based on the organization's goals and objectives and available funding. Polly Tribble, executive director at Disability Rights Mississippi, said she doesn't have any immediate plans to pause intake or furlough staff, but that could change. If the shutdown lasts another month, DRMS will be forced to make some tough decisions as our fiscal year 2025 is being spent on current cases and monitoring, Tribble said. "We're running on fumes now." There's also growing concern about what's to come, said Maria Towne, president and CEO of the American Association of People with Disabilities. Federal funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which provides food aid and is disproportionately relied on by people with disabilities, is set to run out by the end of the month, and new Section 8 housing vouchers will not be issued after November if a deal isn't reached, she said. Given how many people with disabilities rely on benefits from government programs, this shutdown is especially harmful for the disability community, Towne said. We know that the longer the shutdown lasts, the more we can expect disruptions in administrative work and delays in services, including the processing of disability benefits applications and Medicaid, Medicare claims. It is crucial for lawmakers to reach a deal to fund the government. Well, that's our program for this time. This is John Curry, your volunteer reader, thanking you for joining us for the Disability News on Sun Sound and inviting you to join us again next time.